Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Roy Dhanadhar Shri Vasani Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jaya Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopa Pita Shama Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhana Ki Jaya Vrindavan Dhamma Ki Jaya Mathura Dhamma Ki Jaya Navadri Mayapur Dhamma Ki Jaya Jagannath Puri Dhamma Ki Jaya Yandamayi Jumuna Devi Ki Jaya Bhakti Devi Ki Jaya Tulsi Maharani Ki Jaya Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jaya Gaur Premanandi. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya. Vishnu Prasadaya. Bhujaya. Sri Madhavata. Vishnu Prasadaya. Namaste. Saraswati Devi. Vishnu Prasadaya. Vishnu Prasadaya. Vishnu Prasadaya. Mandeham Sri Guru Sri Utapa Pramam Sri Guru Vajra Vajra Sri Guru Pram Sai Pratam Sarvina Ravana Thami Tamsam Sachivam Sarvaitam Sarvajitam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Deva Sri Mara Krishna Padam Sarvina Ravana Tashi Vishakam Vitamsha Anishkalpa Trivisha Vipasami Vajapti Tanapapa Vipra Shri Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 It's July 24th, 2018. Slovenia, and we're reading from Bhagavad Gita, Chapter 2, Contents of the Gita summarized, text 17. Avinashi tutadvidhi
Avinashi tutadvidhi
Yena sarvamidam tatam
Yena sarvamidam tatam
Vinashama vyayasyasya
Vinashama vyayasyasya
Nakaschit kartumarati
Nakaschit kartumarati
Avinasi,
imperishable,
to, but, tut, that, vidhi, know it, yena, by whom, sarvam, all of the body, idam, this, tatam, pervaded, vinasham, destruction, avyayasya, of the imperishable, asya, of it, nakashchit, no one, kartum, to do, arhati, is able. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. That which pervades the entire body, you should know to be indestructible. No one is able to destroy that imperishable soul. Prabhupada's purport. This verse more clearly explains the real nature of the soul, which is spread all over the body. Anyone can understand what is spread all over the body. It's consciousness. Everyone is conscious of the pains and pleasures of the body, in part or as a whole. Okay, can we stop for a minute? And I'd like everybody to be conscious of their body. So, just stop for a minute. Start at the top of your head. Go from the top of your head, down your face, your neck, your shoulders, your arms, your fingers, your chest, your back, your hips, your thighs, your calves, your toes. Be conscious of each of your toes. Is everybody able to be conscious of their whole body?
Yes.
You can all do that? All right. Okay, going on with Prabhupada's purport. This spreading of consciousness is limited within one's own body. The pains and pleasures of one body are unknown to another. Okay, let's experiment with that. Can you become conscious of... Can you close your eyes and try to feel what other people's bodies feel like? Can't do that, can you? Doesn't work. I have no idea what's going on in your body. Maybe your fingers hurting, or maybe your shoulders are relaxed, but I can't feel what's... I'm conscious of this body. I'm conscious of every finger and every toe and my nose and my ear. But I'm not conscious of your body. There's a city to do that.
Eighth primary, and then when there's...
Jayanti Tagore is working on this.
Yeah,
you're working on
that.
Okay.
You'll
be able to tell what everybody else is thinking. All right, very good. Then you can argue with Prabhupada's purport here, because he says... Okay, going on with the purport. Therefore, each and every body is the embodiment of an individual soul, and the symptom of the soul's presence is perceived as individual consciousness. This soul is described as 1/10,000th part of the upper portion of the hair point in size. This is one of the handy facts you learn very early in the Hare Krishna movement, yes? Going on, the Svetasvara Upanishad 5.9 confirms this. Balagra shata bhagasya shata dhya kalpitasyacha bhago jiva savigneya sa chanatyaya kalpate. And the translation of that verse, when the upper point of a hair, now I wonder how much of the hair that is, the upper point. Is it just like the little round circle at the end of the hair? I'm not sure. When it's divided into 100 parts, and again, each of such parts is further divided into 100 parts. Each such part is the measurement of the dimension of the spirit soul. It's pretty small. Okay, that's the end of the translation of that verse. Going on with the purport. Similarly, the same version is stated, Kesh Agra Shatabhagasya, practically almost the same. The same, very similar. Shaktam sha sadrishatmakam jiva sukshma sorupoyam shankhya tito hi chit kanha. Does anyone know what sukshma means? So Prabhupada talks about this in Krishna book when Maharaj Yudhisthira asks about why the devotees of Lord Shiva are very opulent and the devotees of Krishna are sometimes poor. So this word sukshma means very fine, very subtle, very high quality also, like if you have very fine cloth. So sukshma, very small. Swarupo, jiva sukshma swarupo yam. So the jiva has a form that is very fine. Okay, Prabhupada's translation that he gives of this verse. There are innumerable particles of spiritual atoms which are measured as 1/10,000th of the upper portion of the hair. Prabhupada does not give any citation for that verse. Going on here. Therefore, the individual particle of spirit soul is a spiritual atom smaller than the material atoms. And such atoms are innumerable. This very small spiritual spark is the basic principle of the material body, and the influence of such a spiritual spark is spread all over the body as the influence of the active principle of some medicine spreads throughout the body. So again, we all have some experience that we can take medicine that's a very small amount and it can have a big effect. Isn't it like that? Yes? You know, Prabhupada talks sometimes about homeopathic medicine. He seemed to like homeopathic medicine. And that's a very, very small amount of medicine that can affect the whole body. And there are certain medicines or certain poisons also that are tiny fractions. By the way, any of you who find the translation distracting, you're welcome to move closer, if that helps you. If you want, anyway, if you want to, you're welcome to move closer. I'm not armed, so no problem. Okay, so Prabhupada's giving that as an analogy because one may say that you can keep being loud with your translation; they can move forward. Don't feel shy. So one may question, how is it that this tiny little soul can have consciousness all over the whole body? So Prabhupada's giving this analogy that just like you can have some very small amount of medicine, You know, when you take a pill, the actual medicine in there is probably a very tiny amount, some fillers and so forth. So just a drop of something can affect the whole body. Going on, this current of the spirit soul is felt all over the body as consciousness, and that is the proof of the presence of the soul. And it's interesting, the Prabhupada calls this a current, like an electric current. There's energy coming from the soul. Going on, any layman can understand that the material body minus consciousness is a dead body, and this consciousness cannot be revived in the body by any means of material administration. Therefore, consciousness is not due to any amount of material combination, but to the spirit soul. So, of course, this is a point that Srila Prabhupada makes very often. Yes? And I remember for many years I was trying to convince my mother that we are a soul, that we are not the body. And one day she was talking to me and she said, yes, just like when someone dies, the body is there and they are not there. And I got very excited and I said, yes, yes, so we're not this body. And she said, no, I don't believe that. So I was actually there with her when she died. And it's, I don't know if you've ever been with anybody when they died. I was, I've only been there when two beings died. One was my cat. I had had a cat before I joined the movement. And then at one point, after I was in ISKCON for a few years, my mother moved and she couldn't take care of the cat anymore. And the cat was very old. She said, look, it was your cat, you take her. So she didn't live much longer, maybe like 2 months. And I actually was there when she died. And then many, many years later, my mother died in 2002. So many years later, I was there with my mother when she died. And it's quite clear, you know, here's the body with the soul, and here's the body without the soul. That the person, you can say, this is my mother, this is my father. But as soon as the soul is gone, it's not your mother or father anymore. It's just a body. And it's quite obvious. I was, a long time ago, I read about this man who used to trap predator animals. He worked for the U.S. government, and he would trap animals that would eat people's livestock. So animals that would eat cows and sheep and goats and things like that. So he was trapping mountain lions, coyotes, these sort of creatures. And one day he took his 10-year-old son with him, and they found an animal that was still alive. It was in the trap, but it was still alive. And as they came upon it, the animal died. And the 10-year-old boy looked at his father and said, Daddy, why did the light go out of his eyes? And the man was writing this article, and he said after that day, he quit his job, and he started working for ecological organizations to preserve wildlife. But if you're there, when some, I mean, of course, we've seen so many insects like that die. It's maybe not so noticeable. But at least the being of higher consciousness is actually quite noticeable that the being is gone. And Prabhupada said here there's no material combination. You know, it's not like the book about Dr. Frankenstein, where you can take, you know, this part of a dead body and this part of a dead body and put them together and shock them with electricity and it will come alive. I mean, this is obviously the idea of modern science, is that somehow or other, by combining matter, you're going to create life. I remember Vishakha, my god sister, writing an article for Back to Godhead that although the scientists talk about life coming from matter, they have never even created a grain of rice. And I thought about that. We just eat rice, we don't think about it, but rice is a seed. You know, it's alive, or it was alive. But they cannot create that. In fact, they cannot even create the products of life. They cannot create artificial hair that is just like human hair. You know that? If they could, if anybody could create synthetic hair that was exactly like human hair, they would become multi-billionaires. But they cannot do it. They cannot create fake nails that are just like human nails. Again, they would become very rich. They cannot create artificial human milk. If somebody could create artificial human milk, they would immediately be one of the richest people on the planet. They cannot take cow's milk and make it into human milk. So what do you speak of creating life from matter? They cannot do it. They can talk about it and they can say, oh yes, life came from matter. But it's impossible to do that. So if you take a dead body and you put in this and put in that, if the soul is gone, the soul is gone. Okay, going on with the purple. In the Mundaka Upanishad 3.1.9, the measurement of the atomic spirit soul is further explained. Eshonur atma chetasa veditavyo yasmin prana panchada samvivesha pranaishtitam sarvam otam prajanam yasmin vishudhe vibhavachesha atma. Prabhupada's translation of this verse. The soul is atomic in size and can be perceived by perfect intelligence. The atomic soul is floating in the five kinds of air, prana, apana, vyana, samana, and udana. It's situated within the heart and spreads its influence all over the body of the embodied living entities. When the soul is purified from the contamination of the five kinds of material air, its spiritual influence is exhibited. That's the end of that translation. The Hatha Yoga system is meant for controlling the five kinds of air, encircling the pure soul by different kinds of sitting postures, not for any material profit, but for liberation of the minute soul from the entanglement of the material atmosphere. So Prabhupada here is referring to the system of Hatha Yoga, or sometimes called Ashtanga Yoga, or sometimes called Dhyana Yoga, which is a mechanical means of finding the soul as different from the body and mind. So because the soul is riding on these five airs within the heart, by manipulation of how you put your body and how you breathe, then you can again find the soul. I find it very interesting that the human body is designed so that you can realize the soul mechanically. We often say that the human body is designed for self-realization, right? The body of an eagle, it's designed for very good eyesight and grabbing the bird in midair, right? I mean, all these bodies, they all have their amazing powers, right? Like some of these animals, they can breathe underwater, they're breathing through their gills. It's only incredible things. You know, a frog can hibernate sometimes for thousands of years. But the human body is designed, the physical body of a human being is designed. So if you just sit in a certain way and breathe in a certain way, you can understand the soul. Of course, it's not only that, because before you do asana and pranayama, you have to do yama niyama. So if you are eating meat, if you're drinking wine, having illicit sex and so forth, it won't work. Which is why people nowadays in their yoga studios, they imitate the postures and they imitate the pranayama, but because they haven't done the yama niyama, it's not effective. But still, the point is that the human body is mechanically designed for that. That's pretty amazing, isn't it? It's a body that's designed for self-realization. And I'm sure we've all experienced that this human body is not really designed for very good sense gratification. Yes, everybody has discovered that. We have a very limited amount of sensory strength and ability compared even to the lower animals, what to speak of to the demigods. But we can engage in self-realization. Okay, continuing with the purport. So the constitution of the atomic soul is admitted in all Vedic literatures, and it is also actually felt in the practical experience of any sane man. So Prabhupada's saying here, even if you don't do Hatha Yoga, any sane man, if you're not crazy. Nowadays, we can't use the word. If you're not mentally ill, if you're a normal person, ordinary person, in your practical experience, we can understand that we are the soul. Prabhupada says, only the insane man can think of this atomic soul as all-pervading Vishnu Tattva. So now Prabhupada goes to a completely different topic. Instead of talking about whether or not we are the body, he's talking about whether or not we are God. So he's saying, only if you are crazy will you think that you are God. Okay, going on. The influence of the atomic soul can be spread all over a particular body. According to the Mundaka Upanishad, this atomic soul is situated in the heart of every living entity, and because the measurement of the atomic soul is beyond the power of appreciation of the material scientists, some of them assert foolishly that there is no soul. The individual atomic soul is definitely there in the heart, along with the supersoul, and thus all the energies of bodily movement are emanating from this part of the body. The corpuscles which carry the oxygen from the lungs gather energy from the soul. So that's interesting. Prabhupada's talking about anatomy. So the blood corpuscles, they're getting oxygen from the lungs. And with this oxygen, they're spreading throughout the body in order to... So each cell has its process of digestion that uses oxygen. And Prabhupada's saying here, it's getting the energy from the soul. We usually think of getting the energy from the heart, the physical heart, that the physical heart is pumping the corpuscles full of oxygen to nourish all the cells, full of oxygen and nutrients from, so nutrients from the small intestine and the stomach, and oxygen from the lungs, and then, of course, pulling out the waste products. And we think of the heart as just a machine doing this. But Prabhupada said, no, it's being done by the soul. It's gathering energy from the soul. So how do we know this? Because if it was just the heart, you could keep putting an artificial heart in a body and somebody would live forever. Right? Isn't that a fact? If the energy was just coming from the heart. So you keep doing heart transplants and you use the artificial heart machine and we could live forever. But it's not true. Even if you have a healthy heart, if the soul leaves, there's nothing to push the corpuscles around. So the heart is a machine that's actually being operated by the energy of the soul. Otherwise, it's like saying, you know, the car is going by the engine, but who's making the engine go? The driver. Right? Even if you have a driverless car, still, the driver has to direct the car to go, isn't it? Right? You wouldn't want driverless cars just all of a sudden deciding themselves, I'm going to drive some. When the soul passes from this position, the activity of the blood generating fusion ceases. Medical science accepts the importance of the red corpuscles, but it cannot ascertain that the source of the energy is the soul. Medical science, however, does admit that the heart is the seat of all energies of the body. Such atomic particles of the spirit whole are compared to the sunshine molecules. In the sunshine, there are innumerable radiant molecules. Similarly, the fragmental parts of the Supreme Lord are atomic sparks of the rays of the Supreme Lord, called by the name Prabha, or superior energy. So whether one follows Vedic knowledge or modern science, one cannot deny the existence of the spirit, soul, and body, and the science of the soul is explicitly described in the Bhagavad Gita by the personality of Godhead himself. Avinasi tu vad vidi yena sarvam midam tata vinasham avyayasya na kaschit kartumarhati. That which pervades the entire body, you should know to be indestructible. No one is able to destroy that imperishable soul. So you may say, all right, this is really elementary Krishna consciousness, ABC. This is really boring. I already heard my first day in the Hare Krishna movement, my first time I met the devotees, you are not this body, you are a spirit soul. I already know that. I can write it on my Bhakti Shastri exam, and I will get an A plus on that exam. So why do we need to hear again that we are the soul? So I'm sure that many times in the course of our service, when we are chanting our japa, we are chanting kirtan, we are chanting our gayatri, we are addressing deities, we are distributing books, whatever we are doing, or we are at our job, or we are washing the dishes, or we are cleaning the floor, or whatever we are doing. I don't know if any of you have any babies, but somebody may be listening on the recording when you, if you are taking care of your babies, whatever you are doing, driving your car, driving somebody else's car, whatever you're doing, our mind is thinking about so many things. Yes? And especially we're trying to sit down and chant, chanting our japa, chanting our gayatri, chanting in the kirtan, and our mind can be like a monkey. Yes? What about this? What about this? Oh, look at this. What about that? Oh, oh yeah, oh yeah, oh, it, over here, yep, go over here. Bet you've seen, if you've been to India, especially if you've been to Vrindavan, you've seen the monkeys, right? They are good acrobats. I think they are better than the gymnasts in the Olympics. And sometimes our mind may seem like, and we may be trying and trying and trying to control our mind. Even we may be thinking, oh, Prabhupada says Hatha Yoga system, so I'll do that. And still, we may have difficulty controlling the mind. So, we are going to look today at a big secret. Don't try to control the thoughts, control the identity. What does our monkey mind thoughts go to? All of those thoughts that drive us crazy. We're like, be quiet and think about Krishna. They all have to do with our false identity. So, this is your homework, a home fun assignment. Next time you find your mind wandering, notice what identity are these thoughts connected to? They're all what we call sochiti, kanchiti. They're all hankering or lamenting. Why did this happen? Why did that happen? Why did I do this? Why did I do that? I was chatting on the computer today with one devotee who was like, why did I do this? Why did I do that? Now I have to pay for it and I don't want to. I said, Prabhu, I'm sorry. You did that, now you have to pay for it. But we are lamenting. Why did I do this? Why did I do that? Why did he do that? Why did she do that? Why did he say this? Why did she say that? Why did he not do this? Why did she not do this? Why did this not happen? Why did this not happen? Why did that happen? Why did that happen? Why will this never happen? Why will that never happen? Why will I never get this? Why will I never get that? I really wish I could have this. I really wish I could have that. Do you think if I did this, then this would happen? And maybe if I did that, then that would happen. If I say this in this way to this person at that time, then maybe that can happen. Then that is the hankering. So there's the lamenting and then there's the hankering. Well, if I could just do this, if I could just say that, if I could plan this, if I could get this, if I could go there, then this will happen. Okay? If I can make this much money, if I can find, you know, I know one devotee, he's like 50 years old, and he's still not married because he's somehow he wants to marry Lakshmi Devi, you know. And she already has a husband. It's a little bit of a problem. And so, you know, he's thinking, if I can find the perfect Lakshmi Devi, or the ladies are thinking, if I can find the perfect Narayan, you know, and oh, I'll find this, the perfect job, the perfect house, the perfect car, somebody's looking for the perfect blog, I don't know. So, you know, hankering. I could get this service. If only I could make this much money, then I could retire in Mayapur and just chant all day. While my mind is still a monkey. So, which wouldn't do us much good anyway. So if you pay attention to these thoughts, you'll see they all have to do with this identity in the world. All of these lamentation and all of these hankering has to do with something that is not me. Even, I think you were bringing up about our service, right? So someone, you know, I am a pujari, I am a cook, I am a book distributor. I really hate to tell all of you this, but that is also not your eternal identity, probably. I mean, maybe if you're a cook here, maybe that is also your service to cook sweets with Radharani, I don't know, but it probably is not our eternal identity. One devotee who lived in Vrindavan for a very long time, Vrajabihari, some of you may know him, he works with ISKCON Resolve as a professional mediator. So he saw many, many devotees die in Vrindavan. And he said the hardest thing for them to give up was their false identity. You know, he said some of them were an artist, and then they were getting very sick and they couldn't do their art anymore. But that had been their, I am an artist. And all of a sudden, you're not an artist anymore. I mean, this is why it's so devastating when a person's child dies, or they get divorced, or because that was part of their identity. You know, when someone divorces you, you can't say, oh, I'm a good husband, because you're not a husband anymore. And it's like, you just, the person feels like they died. So what we need to do, my dear friends, is we need to let go of this false identity. Now, yes, we have to practically work in the world. That is a fact. If you're married, you have to take care of your spouse. If you're a parent, you have to take care of your children. If you're the pujari, you have to do your seva. If you cannot say to an antaprabhu, I'm not really a pujari, so I'm not going to show up for my seva. We're not saying that. It's not what we're saying. But we have to let go of having our happiness and distress tied to this false identity. Now, I know Prabhupada said in the spiritual world there will be another ISKCON, but it won't have a GBC, I'm sure. If the GBC thought that there would be a GBC, they would all cry. So, Prabhupada said there will be another ISKCON. But not exactly like this. And Prabhupada like said there's no sannyasis in the spiritual. There's no brahmacharis or sannyasis in the spiritual. There's nothing to renounce. So it won't be ISKCON like this. You're not going to have to pay the electric bill. You're not going to have a management meeting. So even if we're saying, I am a member of ISKCON, generally that is also a false identity. You understand? If we're thinking about it in terms of this world. So I want us to do a little experiment. This is going to be practical application of this verse. So we want to let go of our false identity, but then we have to have our real identity. Now, of course, many of you may say, many of us may say, I don't know my real identity. I don't know. Am I a flower in Lord Nityananda's hand? Am I one of the cows? Does Krishna say, Hamsi, and I go, am I a peacock? Am I a blade of grass like Uddhava? Am I playing ball like a cowherd boy? Am I helping Mother Yasoda? Am I decorating the groves for the gopis? I don't know who I am. So how can I think of my real identity? But at least we can think in a general way. I am a soul. I am the servant of Krishna. I am the servant of the devotees. I am the servant of my guru. Advaitacharya, who is Sadashiva, and Sadashiva is the master of the false ego. So he says, Chaitanya dasa mui, Chaitanya dasa, Chaitanya dasa mui, Tanya dasa dasa. I am a servant of Lord Chaitanya. I am a servant of Lord Chaitanya. I am a servant of Lord Chaitanya. And I am a servant of his service. So if we let go of this false identity, especially during japa, kirtan, and gayatri, and we focus on the real identity to whatever extent we understand that real identity. If we understand something that we are a cowherd boy or a goat, or, you know, Krishna has goats also. You know that? Says that in the Bhagavatam. Says he takes care of cows, buffaloes, and goats. So if you already know that you are one of Krishna's goats, then you can meditate like that. Otherwise, at least in a general way, I am a servant of Lord Chaitanya, I am a servant of my Guru, I am a servant of Krishna. I was just speaking recently, just within the last 2 weeks, to one devotee, and I was, when I travel, I see often the same people every year, so I was asking this devotee, how is your inner spiritual life? And this devotee said, well, what I'm doing during japa is I let go of all my identity in this world. I am this person's spouse. I am in charge of this preaching project. And I just focus on, I am a servant of my Guru. I am a servant of Krishna. And this devotee said, when I focus like this during japa, my whole japa has changed. So I'd like us to do a little, is that all right? Can we do a practical application on this verse? So what I'd like us to do is, if you don't have your beads, you can just chant without them. So I'd like us to chant a little bit and first let go of our false identity. So we're going to say to ourselves, I am not this body. I am not whatever your name is. I am not, you know, Krishna, Priya, Radhika, Sundari, Devi Dasi. Whatever your name is, I am not that. I am not this body. I am not this mind. I have nothing to do with anything that this body and mind are involved in. I have no past and future in this world. I have no family. I have no country. I have no job, I have no friends, I have no enemies, I have no duties, I have no responsibilities, I have no debts. Let that go. And then, I am a soul. And try to envision, I am this little soul, 1/10,000th the tip of a hair, and I am spreading this consciousness throughout the body, and I am simply a servant of Guru and Gauranga. I am a servant of Krishna. So I'd like us all to practice this just for a little bit. Is that all right? And if any thoughts that have to do with the false identity come, just say, I am a soul. All right? Don't try to push away the thoughts. Change the identity. Don't try to change the thoughts. Leave the thoughts. Try to change the identity. Okay, can we try this? We can. You chant at your own rhythm. Don't chant with my rhythm. Okay. Was that easier than trying to stop the thoughts? Right? And Krishna says this in the sixth chapter. He says, wherever the mind wanders, bring it back and fix it on the self. So you just say, I am a soul. Or if you know you're a spiritual coach, you can say that. But just, I am a soul. When the mind starts to wander, no, I am a soul. I am a soul. And you find when you do that, it's very easy to think of Krishna, isn't he? Yes? Did many of you find that? That as soon as you focus on I am a soul, as soon as you say Hare Krishna, immediately you think of Krishna. And Prabhupada said when we are chanting, we should automatically remember Krishna's form, Krishna's pastimes. And as soon as you're I am a soul, then it's very easy. If one is still in the identity of this body and this mind, trying to think of Krishna is very difficult. So, questions, comments, corrections, additions, suggestions?
Hare Krishna, when you mentioned that our body is meant for self-realization, and you mentioned also the other beings, like animals, for example, spider, he knows how to spread the net, right?
Yes,
he
yes.
He's cool and nothing, so he is in himself.
Yes.
Right? So how come that for us, if we are meant for self-realization, it's so hard to find out or to express this?
Well, it's interesting, you know, in the former ages on the earth. She said that I was saying that the human body is designed for self-realization, but with other creatures, like the spider, just knows how to make a web. So why don't we just know how to be self-realized? In the other ages of the earth, we did. So earlier in human history, every human being knew how to meditate. Every human being knew how to become self-realized. It was just a natural part of human society. And what we have done at the present time is we have crippled ourselves. I mean, I was thinking about, what does it mean to meditate? Because Prabhupada says our japa is smadhanam. Our japa is not actually kirtanam, it's smadhanam, it's remembering, it's meditation. And I was thinking about how the modern media destroys our ability to meditate. You know, movies, television, they're always flashing a different scene. I mean, I remember reading a book on this in the 1970s, I'm sure it's worse now, saying that most commercial television and movies, the scene changes every 10 seconds. And educational shows, it's every 30 seconds. Now it's probably every 2 or 3 seconds. And they do that to give you the illusion of it being interesting. Because biologically we're wired, if there's a sudden movement, there may be some danger, and we become alert. So in the media, they have all the sudden changes, and it takes something that would normally be very boring and makes it interesting. But what it makes it appear to be interesting. But what it also does is it's taken our mind so that our mind feels like it needs constant jumping. It's actually increased the jumping of the mind. And it's very rare anymore that people sit. I mean, when I was a child, I would go outside and just sit in the forest and just watch the trees and the birds and the water and just breathe deeply and relax. Do you know if you have physical pain, if you just breathe slowly and deeply for 5 minutes, a lot of the pain will probably go away. But our modern lifestyle, nobody stops to breathe even. Honestly, people can go for, months where they never sit down and do 2 minutes where they're just breathing slowly. They're not noticing the world around them. And then what to speak of what people are eating? What people are eating, it so much puts the body in tamaguna and in rajaguna that this natural ability of the human body is, they're ruining it. So, having illicit sex starting when they're 14 years old, I mean, so many things. And what to speak of intoxication, even young children, they're drinking Coca-Cola, isn't it? So they're damaging the natural ability of the human body, and therefore we find it quite difficult. And those of us who are functioning in this society, we become affected by these things. And unfortunately, we're so affected that even when we try to slow down, it's very difficult. We say, okay, I'll go on a retreat for the weekend, and But, you know, we bring our phone. And, and if you don't bring your phone, you're worried about your phone. I mean, I remember on the Govardhan retreat, you know, there's no point to bring my computer because I didn't even trust the electricity. I had a bad experience in Vrindavan that I plugged in my computer to the wall and it blew up my computer. Seriously. So, you know, I have special things when I plug in my computer. Anyway, so I wasn't going to bring my computer to the Govardhan retreat. It's like 4 or 5 days. And I was there with my oldest grandson, Janu. I think many of you know him. Now his name is Jai Doita. Anyway, so he was with me at that retreat. And I think on the second day, I said something to him. I said, you know, I know when I open my computer again, there's going to be like 300 emails. And he said, Grandma, if you didn't bring your computer, then don't bring it in your mind either. And I said, oh, yes. So, you know, we try to get away and we bring our constant stimulation or else we bring our worry about it. And so we made it extremely, extremely difficult. We've messed up the normal, natural ability of the human body, and it's getting worse and worse and worse. What we're doing physiologically, what we're doing mentally. And then we say, oh, it's so hard. Is there anything else? Yes.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada speaks like a small jiva.
Yes.
Means I might be there. Means I know her spirit body. Anytime, internal spirit body. My spirit body and I, jiva, is same. I, spirit body, my internal, and jiva is same. Srila Prabhupada speak, I really, one part, means I don't have internal spirit body.
Ah, that is a very good question. But it says, Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema, that Krishna Prema is eternally existing with every jiva. Yes? You know that verse? Yes. Okay. And Prabhupada would emphasize that prema is not something that we get from someplace else. It's awakened by the devotee, but we don't get it from the devotee. It's like if you get a seed and you put water on it and you put it in the sunshine, you awaken the seed. But the nature of the seed is already there, isn't it? Yes? You take an apple seed and a pear seed.
Wait here means not have internal.
Huh?
Wait. You put in tree and seed.
Yeah.
Means no internal.
Yes, it is internal.
Coming after means no living up before.
Okay, but this is a material analogy. So by material analogy, it must be faulty. But still, the point is, if I am planting an apple seed, I am not creating the apple tree. Okay, I am awakening the apple tree. I am not creating it, I am awakening it. Does that make sense? So when we say that the guru, the pure devotee, bestows Krishna prema, but Krishna prema is already there in the jiva. One devotee, Gopinath Acharya, I don't know if you know him, he serves in Oxford. So he gave a presentation in Harvard, I was there in 2016, that is the swarup of the living entity, inherent or bestowed. Do you understand? Do you understand the English? Do you all understand? If you don't understand, say something. Because I'm not sure, you're just all like this. I don't know if you understand these words or not. So inherent means it's part of you. Bestowed means it's given. So he wrote a long paper. Is the swarup of the jiva inherent? Is it part of the jiva with no beginning? or is it given by the guru? Is it given by the devotee? And he said, both. Again, it's just like that. If I take an apple seed, I have to give it water, I have to give it sunshine, I have to give it soil, or it will not manifest. But the apple tree is already there. I am not creating it. I'm giving it facility to manifest. Or, you know, even in this world, if you have a child, and the child has some talent that is already there, but without the proper atmosphere, the talent may not manifest, it may not fructify. So the Swarup is already there in Jiva. This talking about size of the Jiva is for our understanding on the material platform. Because in the spiritual world, there's not space and time like we are thinking here at all. You know, here we're thinking there's some space. I'm a particular size, my body's a particular size, it's taking up this much space and so forth. And we think if the jiva is so small, then it would be a very small gopi, you know, or a very small cow. And for Krishna to dance the Ras dance, he would also have to be very small with all these tiny little gopis. But this is a very much a material way of thinking about things. Because there's not space and time the way we understand them here at all. One of the first things that, the first thing that manifests the material world is time. And then after time, it agitates the modes of material nature. And this forms sound, which forms space. So that means before there was not space. I mean, even the scientists talk about this. I'm not a scientist. I'm a social scientist. I'm not a hard scientist. You understand? I have not studied chemistry, physics, higher mathematics. This is not my field. So I may be getting this wrong. I have some science friends, and they say, Ermila, you have to be very careful when you talk about science, because it's not your field. So it's not my field. But what I understand is that the scientists, when they talk about the Big Bang, and the, they say that there was no space and no time also. It's some inconceivable that there was no space and no time. So we also say this. We say in the beginning, there was no time, there was no space. So to try to take how the Shastras are explaining the size of the Jiva for our mind in this world, and to try to put that into some spatial idea in terms of our Swarup, is that that's not going to be very helpful. At least the materially conditioned soul, the soul in illusion, has a form that is 1/10,000th the tip of the hair. That doesn't mean that the soul Swarup is not there. But it's not active. And again, it can become active. That's the best I can do for you. If the soul, if Krishna Prema is there eternally without beginning, it must be a specific Krishna Prema. It's not like just some general Krishna Prema. If I say, I love you, and I can't explain in what relationship I love you, it doesn't mean anything. Do you understand? If someone says, I love you, and if you say, well, you love me in what sense? No, not in any sense. I just love you. There's no meaning to that. What does that mean? If I love you, I must love you in some way. I love you as an example, as an inspiration. Or I love you as somebody I want to help, or I love you as a friend, or I love you as somebody I want to help as a subordinate, or I love you as a husband. I mean, I have to love you in some way. You understand? There has to be some meaning to it. Not just I love. So Krishna Prema is there eternally in the heart of the soul, means it must be something specific. Yeah? Do you agree logically? Do you agree logically with that?
Half of one.
Okay. Other thing is, we say we are always a person. Krishna says, never was there a time when you did not exist, nor me, nor all these kings, nor in the future will any of us cease to be. Yes? We are eternally a person. Does everyone agree this is our Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy? That we are persons with no beginning and no end. We were not impersonal, and then we become personal. Yes? Is this our philosophy? Maybe you think our philosophy is wrong. That's another thing. But this is our philosophy. You can agree with it or not, as you like. So if we are eternally persons without beginning, what does that mean? Because Krishna says in the Chatur Shloka of the Bhagavatam, anything that appears to be of value, if it is without relation to me, it has no reality. Know it to be my illusory energy, that reflection which appears to be in darkness. So if I and you and you and you, if each of us is a person without beginning, and if Krishna Prema is there as part of the soul without beginning, that personality and that prema have to be in relation to Krishna in some specific way. Must be. Otherwise, we cannot say, I am a person. I am a person how? So I was talking to one person who said, no, we were not, we had no relationship with Krishna previously. I said, then in what way were we a person? How was I a person? I'm a person, I like, what does it mean, I'm a person? It means I have an opinion that is different from yours. I have my own opinion. I have my own tastes. I like strawberry, you don't like strawberry. I like purple, you like green. You understand? I have things I like, things I don't like. I have my own opinion. That's what it means to be a person. Prabhupada says, I'm not saying, he's saying. So my opinion, my tastes as a person, if they're not in relationship to Krishna, then Krishna says they are illusion. So my personality, eternally, without beginning, must be in relationship to Krishna for it to be real. And if I have tastes and desires, then they have a form. So some people may say that from the beginning, for the conditioned soul, that form was dormant, it was not activated. Some people will say it's activated. I am not going to go there at all. And then we will be here until 12 o'clock tomorrow night. So I'm not going to go into that discussion. Did we fall from the spiritual world or not? This is a connected, you understand? Philosophically, these things are linked, but I'm not going to take that step. Maybe another time, but not tonight. But just the concept that we are always a person, what does it mean to be a person? We have Krishna Prema, and that has to have no beginning. So what is it right now for a conditioned soul? They're not aware of their relationship with Krishna. They're not conscious of it, yes? They're not manifesting it. So they're also not manifesting their eternal body. You know, the demigods can change their bodies, yeah? You know that? It's explained with Indra and the demigods when Bali is coming, the demigods change their form and they escape. So if the demigods can change their form, I'm sure the soul can change its form and manifest or not manifest its form. So if I'm not manifesting my love for Krishna, if I'm not manifesting my personality in relationship to Krishna, then that Swarup is not visible. It's not either. But when it awakens by the association of devotees again, it becomes visible. But that doesn't mean it's not there. It's just not manifested. That's the best I can do for you with this. It's a little inconceivable. It is very late, and I got this notice in my email today. I never had to fill this out for any temple, so I had to fill out my name and my passport number and all these things. And in the notice, it said, "You need to end the class on time." And already I've gone late, so I think I should end. I know this was a very long purport, and I didn't want to just read through the purport. So we were discussing the purport. But I wanted to show how this understanding is very practical. This is not just some idea. Oh, I am not this body, I am a soul. Oh, yes, yes, yes. Now let me worry about this body. And someday, later, when I am advanced, I will stop worrying about the body and the mind. No. Now, this is our sadhana, at least japa and Gayatri Kirtan, at least in those times, to let go of the false identity. And when the mind goes to the thoughts of the false identity, I am a soul. I am a servant of my guru. I am a servant of Lord Chaitanya. I am a servant of Krishna, however, whichever one works for you. And you'll find that your mind will come back, and you can focus on Krishna. So thank you very much. Shri Prabhupada ki jai. Bhagavad Gita ki jai.